This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We've been warned that America is losing its technological dominance. Can the United States remain a world leader if it loses its technological edge, if it depends increasingly on other nations for technologies vital to its military security and economic competitiveness? My guest Martin Tolchin says no. Tolchin is co-author of the new book Selling Our Security. He's also a reporter for the New York Times. He says America is losing out in several ways. Foreign investors are taking over American companies, and foreign companies often have the competitive edge in the market because they have government support. Tolchin says the U.S. hasn't learned how to deal with economic adversaries who are political allies. He told me some of the industries we've lost out on.
We have lost the lead in semiconductors. We invented VCRs. They're no longer made here. Very few TVs are made here. We have lost the lead in robotics. We are losing the lead in genetics. We had 100% of the world's lithography market 10 years ago. Today we have 20%. In 1970, the Japanese had none of the world market in DRAMs, dynamic random access memories. Today they have 80%. We used to be the world leader in semiconductor production, and it's steadily declined to 35% now. And so we are either behind the curve or out of play.
Now, how much of this has to do with the fact that a lot of American companies have been bought out by foreign interests?
A great deal, and we think that's a major factor. And we don't blame the American companies as much as we blame the American policymakers. We also think that some of the blame should be cast on American corporate executives who have not had the vision, the foresight, to commercialize their products. And we also think that a major problem is that the American people are not investing in America. There's a basic failure to invest here, to save money and do something with it. We are a total consumer economy, and we have amassed enormous debt.
Now, the fact that we're losing our technological edge worries you. Part of the reason why is that you think it can affect our national security.
Exactly.
Well, how would how the industries that you've just mentioned going to affect our national security?
Well, we found in the Gulf War that we had to call on our ambassadors all over the world to supply to get foreign nations to supply essential parts. And we don't believe that it's possible to be technologically independent. We do believe, however, that it is imperative to be interdependent, that we have to depend on others, but we have to have others depending on us as well. And as the tire industry has shrunk and the machine tool industry has shrunk and industry after industry has gone down the tubes, we feel that we are losing our position to negotiate with other companies and other countries. And this was really brought home very vividly in the Gulf War.
Well, you say that a diagram of the General Dynamics fighter aircraft, what, the F-17, looks like a miniature UN because the parts come from just about all over the world.
Exactly.
So what does that mean? What's your interpretation of that?
We think that it's fine for parts to come from all over the world, but we have to be a player. We have to have something. We have to manufacture something that other people want and need in order to get the things from them that we want and need.
Is this a security risk if you have an aircraft fighter with parts that are made in different parts of the world?
I don't see it as a security risk as much as an overdependence. We had the Department of Commerce had a report in 1990 that found that of 12 key technologies, the United States was losing ground in all but three, and we have that in our book. There have been reports by Department of Defense, which was required by Congress to compile a list of 20 critical technologies and where we stood vis-a-vis other countries. And we were well ahead in most of those technologies, but there were quite a few in which other countries had the lead. And many of those technologies were developed here, such as the microchip was developed here and to a large extent commercialized abroad, such as VCR. In effect, we are in the position that Great Britain was in after the First World War, when penicillin was discovered there but commercialized here. Now we continue to be the great intellectual resource of the world. We pour billions of dollars into research and development, but we just are very sluggish in commercializing what we find, and we let other people do it.
Well, what do you think the government can do in that dilemma? You're saying that we're good at creating new technology, we're not good at continuing to manufacture and sell it. So what kind of government role do you see in that?
Well, we think that the government should play a very important role in nurturing these technologies in many ways, in perhaps relaxing antitrust restrictions against emerging technologies, allowing R&D combinations between various companies, direct subsidies. You know, the four European countries subsidize the Airbus. The Washington policymakers were very derisive about that. Now the Airbus has taken flight, literally and figuratively, and has become just a major competitor in the aircraft industry. While McDonnell Douglas, one of our companies, is being sold, or 40% of it is being sold to Taiwan.
Well, you say that former President Reagan and President Bush have found it hard to reconcile their commitments to free trade and to national security. What kind of conflict does that pose for them?
Well, I think it's a conflict for both conservatives and for liberals. I think that conservatives believe in a strong military, and they believe in a strong economy, and they believe in economic competitiveness, but they don't like government intervention in general. And they don't like government intervention in the corporate world, especially. For liberals, the problem is the reverse. Liberals don't resist government intervention, but they are not that concerned about a strong military. This is traditionally. I think today the lines are being blurred. But one part of the problem here is that both conservatives and liberals in the Congress in the body politic have, for very different reasons, totally committed themselves to a free trade, laissez-faire attitude with regard to our technologies. And this is an attitude that is shared by none of our major trading partners.
So American companies are competing with foreign companies that have the support of their government.
Exactly. It is true that much of the problem that American industry faces has been created by corporate management. There's no question about that. But I think it is also true that much of the problem has been created by a very unlevel playing field in which our companies are more or less left to go it alone against foreign companies that have extraordinarily deep pockets and great government support.
You talk about an unlevel playing field. One example you use is Japan. Now, Japan has cartels, the equivalent of cartels. We oppose cartels. We oppose monopolies in this country, and this poses a real dilemma. I mean, you wouldn't want to see us return to the days of monopolies.
Monopolies or cartels, I totally agree. But I think that we have to realize that when we are dealing with a company that owns a bank and that owns a manufacturing base and that owns research institutions and that owns an extraordinary amount of things, of a vertically integrated company in Japan they're called Keiretsu's, we have to realize what we are dealing with, and we have to somehow cope with that. And I am very much opposed to our development of monopolies or cartels. But I think that the answer for us is, first of all, to have some kind of coordinated government policy. One of the things that we recommend is something resembling the Japanese Ministry of Industry and Technology, MITI, to coordinate. Right now we have our technology policy decided by the Pentagon and the U.S. Trade Representative, the Department of Commerce, the Exim Bank, about a dozen different agencies, some of which are often at loggerheads. But when, for example, Japan sat down to negotiate the FSX, they brought in their equivalent of commerce and DOD and everybody else, and they had a very unified plan. And I think that we should recognize our limitation in trying to do in our way, in our splintered way, what other governments do in partnership with their companies.
So what do you think America should do to adjust its antitrust policies?
I think we should relax them, certainly as far as research and development is concerned. I think we ought to allow companies to combine in terms of research and development. And in effect, actually, that is beginning to happen because the antitrust laws really are not being applied. Actually, the antitrust laws have been extremely lax during the last 12 years. But they are not being applied that rigorously to research and development. But we ought to really say flat out that we ought to encourage research and development partnerships between various companies.
How would that work?
Well, they would no longer be subject to antitrust laws. You would have, let's say, IBM working with, say, Intel to develop a new chip. Now, it is true we have Semitech, which is a consortium of companies that use chips in their industry, and more companies do this. This is a government, this is a consortium between the government and these companies. Incredibly, the automobile industry is not yet part of this consortium, and I think, again, you have to look at the short-sightedness of American companies. I think one really striking example of the short-sightedness of American companies is their failure really to avail themselves of university-based research, research that is paid for by American taxpayers. Many research institutions, such as the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Caltech, have programs that they refer to as industrial liaison programs, which enable all companies to pay a fee, and last year I think it was about $100,000 a company, to get an advanced peek at the research that is being done at these universities, and also to get university scholars and researchers to help them with any problems that they have encountered in the marketplace, and anything that they need to overcome the marketplace. And the chairman of NEC, Nippon Electric Corporation, credits his corporation's membership in the MIT Industrial Liaison Program with giving his company a great advantage in the computer industry. Unfortunately, American companies do not really avail themselves of this, whereas foreign companies do. And I think it also raises a question about whether universities should be able, in effect, to sell federally funded research to foreign companies. This is research that is really paid for by American taxpayers. MIT receives $640 million a year from the federal government for research, which is a heck of a lot of money, and that research is paid for by American taxpayers. And it strikes me as kind of bizarre that people who pay taxes to support this kind of research may be working for companies that are disadvantaged by programs, by the industrial liaison programs of these universities.
If you're just joining us, my guest is New York Times reporter Martin Tulchin, who's the co-author of the new book, Selling Our Security, The Erosion of America's Assets. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Martin Tulchin, author of the new book, Selling Our Security. So do you think that we should not only have the government support certain industries in the United States, and you also suggest change the antitrust laws a little bit. Do you think we should also be setting up certain barriers to foreign companies to help level the playing field?
I don't like barriers. There's something about barriers that I think strikes me the wrong way. We have been the most free country in the world in terms of our people coming in from everywhere, our money coming in from everywhere. We've gotten ideas from everywhere. We've gotten products from everywhere. And I think it served us well. Rather than barriers, I prefer nurturing.
Nurturing?
nurturing our companies.
Oh, I see.
Nurturing our companies to make them more competitive rather than keeping other companies from selling their products here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you'd like to see the American government support certain American industries, who's going to decide which industries are of such significance to the economy or national security that they deserve the support?
Well, this is the criticism that is lodged against, quote, industrial policy, quote, or, quote, technology policy, end quote. My own feeling is that all of our allies do it, and they're usually right. Not always, but they're usually right. We have a Pentagon report issued every 2 years on what they consider the critical industries to be and our standing vis-a-vis other countries in developing those critical industries and technologies. We have had a lot of people studying this problem, and I would say that even though we may not target 100% of the critical industries, and even though we may guess wrong occasionally, I think that there are some very, very smart people around who are really involved in this subject.
I don't need to point out how much in debt America is. Where would the money come from to administer such a program and the money to help the developing industries?
Well, ideally, the money to administer this kind of a program would really come from the additional jobs that would be created by these technologies. You know, you take something as simple as a device that's now going to be operational on Japanese cars, I think, in 3 years or 4 years, and this device will enable the motorist to sense traffic patterns in front of him and tell him if there's a traffic tie-up down the road, let's say 5 miles or 10 miles down the road, and give him other routes that he might take to his destination. Now, once that technology becomes available, if we don't have it, we are going to be at a tremendous disadvantage. American automobile makers are going to be at a tremendous disadvantage. These technologies create jobs, they save jobs, and I think that's where this financing will come from.
The economist Robert Reich, who's actually one of the advisors to Bill Clinton, has made the argument that ownership doesn't matter now because we're in a global economy, and so many companies are multinationals anyways. You know, it's hard to tell. He asked the question, who is us? You know, it's hard
exactly
to tell now in the global economy.
Right.
So what's your response to that?
I believe in capitalism, and if you believe in capitalism, ownership does matter. I think ownership is very important in determining the development of various technologies, of various industries, and it's also very important, not just to the people who work for those industries, but to all the so-called service economy, the lawyers, the advertising people, the Harvard MBAs, they are not given the same opportunity with foreign companies as they are by American companies.
You know, one of the arguments against this kind of industrial policy that you're talking about is that it comes from a certain xenophobia, that people are afraid of the Japanese, people are afraid of the Germans. Do you think that that's a fair criticism of the kind of policy that you're advocating?
I think that there is some xenophobia, but I think it's because of the policies we have followed, not because of the policies that we are advocating. I think there is some xenophobia because our policymakers in Washington have been impervious, really, to the surge of foreign investment. And the problem really is not with all foreign investment. I have personally no problem with foreign investment in real estate, unless we're talking about a cultural landmark. I think I have no problem, let's say, with the purchase of a machine tool company or a tire company or a semiconductor company. But I do have a problem when there are so many purchases that our own production begins to go below 30%, below 20%, below 10%, and sometimes down to zero.
One last question. Do you think that people, that policymakers play on xenophobic fears in order to get their point across? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I think people are getting really whipped up about the Japanese and the Germans and everything.
I think they do. And I think also part of it has been an insensitivity by some of the overseas investors on what they purchased, purchasing things like Rockefeller Center that have meaning above and beyond.
Have certain symbolic meaning.
A clump of stone, yeah.
Martin Tulchin is a reporter for The New York Times and author of the new book Selling Our Security, The Erosion of America's Assets. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.